Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. Now this time we're going to talk about overcoming setbacks. And like we often do, we're going to rather make a definition of what is a setback so we all know what it is we're talking about. And we all know that we're thinking about the same thing. So I'm going to ask that, what is a setback? What does that mean? And I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. How nice. Welcome. And let's see. You know, this is a good thing, I think. Most of us think that setbacks are temporary obstacles to moving forward, as Thomas says. Temporary obstacle to moving forward. Something that, well, isn't going to end our group, but is kind of needs to be handled before we can go on. A temporary obstacle to moving forward. Nicely done. Thank you. For example, well, we have a lot of, thank you for all of this, all of these different obstacles, and they're all very true. Karen says that a setback is oftentimes caused by new information, something that you didn't expect. When we started, we thought we had all the information that we needed to gather, but now we found out something new, and it makes a difference. We have to do something about it. And it might even be positive information. It's not necessarily negative, but it sets back our timeline, our progress for a minute because, well, we need to assimilate the new information. Good point. Yes, thank you. We need to, Carolyn says, we oftentimes need to check out the new information, see if it's true. Because nowadays there's lots and lots of information available to us, especially on the internet, and we have to determine what its source is. What's the basis for it? What's its foundation? Is it true? Is it, good point, Jordan and others are saying that sometimes information goes both ways, and sometimes it's incomplete. New information, we got to think about it. We have to validate it. We have to incorporate it into our discussion. New information, it sets us back at least time-wise, right? It's because a setback is really something that, as Thomas said, temporary obstacle to moving forward. And I suppose obstacle maybe isn't fair because sometimes the setback is just something that causes our time to be well, set back. Yes, thank you. I'm like, yeah, the time gets set back. Fantastic. So it's something that just kind of stalls the process for a minute. You know, David and others are making an interesting point that sometimes a temporary obstacle to moving forward, which is how we basically defined a setback, is when we get new members. Because they have to be brought up to speed, right? And, yeah, this is a very good point, too. People are saying you have to get used to them. Yeah, I suppose that's true. They have to be made a part of the group, part of the team. And sometimes that takes people a little while. And sometimes there's a learning curve there. Yeah, so new members might give us a temporary setback. Arshia says that that sometimes the setback is because something is taking longer for a response. Mm-hmm. Some sort of information that you need is taking longer for a response. A reply to a query. Aisha says that she was thinking more about, or Shia says, excuse me, that she was thinking more about like a government response, something that you need. Mm-hmm. Hayden says that sometimes you need a permit. Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah. Takes longer than you expect to get a permit, for example. For example, what kind of a permit? Well, sometimes... All right, in the United States, and of course this is a global show, but I imagine this is true other places too, you're allowed to do a protest and you're allowed to assemble, but especially in big cities, because in urban areas it's disruptive. It's disruptive traffic-wise, and you need to have some police protection. Even if it's not such a controversial thing, but a protest often is. And so you need a permit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and they only issue so many, well, for a certain area, for a certain day. You know what I mean? You can't block everything and have a whole bunch of different kind of protests at the same time, ordinarily. And therefore, you might need a permit for that if you wanted to march down the street and gather and perhaps have an assembly. Mm-hmm. Might need a permit. Good point. Mm-hmm. Reese says that sometimes the temporary obstacle to moving forward is that you need to make contact with someone, like officials. Yeah. You need to reach out. You need to contact, and they need to respond, right? And sometimes that response takes longer than you think. Mm-hmm. And here is the number one quote. It's kind of like, oh, look, a lot of people said this. And thank you for all of your participation, that a setback is often that you need more funds. You've run out of money. And that's the one that a lot of people have truly thought about and have experienced, obviously, too. It's the first one that comes to mind, I think, that sometimes you have an economic temporary setback. We didn't know it would take this much money. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good point, too, that sometimes it is not only funds, money, that you run out of, but time. You didn't know it was going to take, didn't think it would take this long. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you run out of time. You've got a space for a certain amount of time, or you've got plans for a certain amount of time, and you thought you'd have it done. Mm-hmm. And, oh, that's a good point, sometimes something has a deadline, and the deadline needs to be extended because you haven't quite made it, aren't quite finished yet. It took longer than you thought. And sometimes, of course, there's an economic reason, and you need to stop and raise more funds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. You know, this is a good point being made, too. I don't know if this is really a setback because you know about it ahead of time, but sometimes you've got events. If the setback is taking too long, sometimes you run into events like the holidays and things like that when people are not available. Most people are not available real readily. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, that you run out of time. And then you run into scheduling conflicts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of the ones that we have just talked about are temporary, right? They've got a definite conclusion. You can do something about them. You can raise more funds. You can schedule. You can assimilate the new information and the new members. Mm-hmm. And the response will come, even though it's taking longer than it seems like it would. But, yes, also people are mentioning timing temporary obstacles, like someone gets sick. That's a very good point, too, that someone who is fairly crucial to the organization has a scheduling conflict, either because of business or illness or whatever, and that's when you've got a time setback. The timing has gotten away from you. The deadline hasn't been met. Mm-hmm. Okay. So these are all ones that are temporary. Basically speaking, a lot of them have to do with waiting for the circumstances to clear up or to take a direct action like raising more money and assimilating new information and people and like that. And raising, yeah. And also, you might also have an action that needs to be done to get someone to do something for you, like a permit. Mm-hmm. But we're a lot of people, and thank you for all of your participation, are asking about more serious setbacks where they don't seem to be temporary. It looks like that's really gonna put a dent in our plans there. Because oftentimes setbacks are temporary, but sometimes they're not. Mm-hmm. For example, Macaulay says that if you have a serious setback, you might need to change the group focus. Mm-hmm. Actually change the focus of the group because something has happened, the circumstances have changed. Uh-huh. And he cites new legal implications. Good point. Sometimes the law changes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some sort of a regulation or a rule changes, something that makes the focus of the group need to change. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an interesting point, too. I wouldn't have thought about this as a setback, but a lot of people are saying it, and thank you for your participation. And, you know, I always say that these are organic shows. They're not actually scripted. And so we just go where everybody is interested. And people are saying that a lot of times the change that is would be really a permanent setback in its way that needs to change the group focus is because whatever it was we were trying to accomplish, other groups were working on it too because it was a social issue or whatever. And the issue itself has changed because something has been resolved. Yeah, we don't need to work on that part anymore. It's been resolved. And it might even be resolved in a way that we agree with. Mm-hmm. That's a setback to the focus of the group, I suppose. Although really, it's kind of a good thing, right? It's something that we wanted. It's just that now we need to rethink. And also, a lot of times, a peace has been resolved, but not the whole thing. And we have to decide that, too. We have to decide if there is, if our focus is going to become more narrow, or we're going to, well, yeah, sometimes groups dissolve. It's a good point. It's been solved. We have no purpose anymore. Have to decide that, too, really, if we have a purpose, if we're still going. Yeah. You know, that's a very valid point. We might not be. But a lot of times groups change focus. And, you know, if you guys have heard me say before an example of, in the United States, the March of Dimes. And their disease got cured. So now they do baby care. They help newborns. Mm-hmm. And their focus is newborn health. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they changed focus to a different area. Because they were so well organized. Yeah, they were already in existence. And yes, you know, this is a good point too, and I don't know if this is true or not, but thank you for your participation. A lot of people are saying the March of Dimes is not what it once was. It became smaller because they kind of did lose their focus. I don't know. I was never involved in it. It's just an example of a big organization. It's like, well, if we ever cure breast cancer, right? And then there's lots of scientists working on it. Organizations that do runs and fundraising and like that, they're already in place, and they'll have a setback because what their focus was is no longer. The disease has been cured, God willing. But they're already an organization. They're already have an administration, they already have fundraising in place, and they've got in this United States and probably in other places too, they've got little pink ribbons. You know how they fundraise. And the mechanisms in place, my assumption is that the group will change focus to a different disease, probably a different kind of cancer, right? Yeah, it's a good point. You do some sort of cancer that affects women primarily. Yeah. You know, that's just going, oh, well, that's a good thing, but it's a setback to our group. Good point. You know, this is an interesting point, too, and thank you. Thank you for your participation. And some of these issues get talked about prior shows, but most of these have not. But anyway, prior shows, if you'd like to hear some, the last five archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And, you know, we've talked about mission statements before, and Joyce is making a good point, and a lot of people are using the word mission statement, and also we're going to talk about value statement. It's kind of a little bit of a different thing. This is a good definition, just a general definition. Joyce says that when you have a not temporary, kind of a permanent setback, you need to change your mission statement as to how you are going to proceed. And that is what a mission statement does, right? It says what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? How are we going to proceed? That's our mission statement. It's the focus of the group, the practical focus on what we're going to do, what we want to do, how we're going to proceed. And then Peter and others are talking about value statements, and that if you have a setback that is not just temporary, you might need to have a change in your value statement as a group. And a value statement, according to Peter, and it's really a good definition, is what we hope to accomplish. It's not how we're going to do it, but what we would like to do, what our ultimate goal is, our value statement. And both of those would, of course, be looked at and reconsidered to see what we're going to do now. Mm-hmm. This is a really good point, too. Terry and others are saying that what you do when you have a setback and how you determine whether or not it's temporary even depends on whether the setback is internal or external. Depends on whether the setback is internal or external. Mm-hmm. And he uses as the example that an internal setback would be the departure of a valued member. Yeah, somebody who's really perhaps even the leader of the group, but somebody whose expertise is really valuable. And having them not be there anymore is a real loss to our mission, a real loss to going forward, because they'll need to be replaced. And sometimes they're pretty irreplaceable, right? And oftentimes that it happens, people don't voluntarily even leave the group. They might die, you know, or become ill, and or move away and can't really come. And that's, of course, that's Skype nowadays. But yes, there is no Skype in death. Good point. But somebody who's really integral, that's an internal setback, and might make us change our focus, might force us to. And then there are external setbacks that, for example, a government-created setback may be insurmountable, according to Terry and others. A government-created setback may be insurmountable. Something that really changes the game, really changes the rules, something that you're required by law to obey, but changes the focus of your group. Yeah, and that is an external setback. Internal, although it's painful, is of course easier to handle because you can think of something to do that is practical and workable. Sometimes external, there's not much you can do about it. interesting point. A lot of people are making a point about external, I would call them natural causes. For example, George has given an example about an historic committee, like an historic preservation, and there's some sort of a natural disaster, and the subject building is demolished. It's destroyed. And the group will have to decide whether or not to disband because their purpose is no longer. They've had a permanent external setback. Or they might want to take on a different project of a similar kind. You see, yeah, it rather depends on how cohesive the group is, how well they're getting along, if people are satisfied and they really like it and there's something else to be done. Yeah. See, in the historical building area, in the United States, you can get buildings designated historic landmarks, for example. It is a good thing in the sense that they won't be demolished. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are arguing about whether, thank you for all of your participation. There's kind of a flip side to that, and I'll just say this very quickly, because when you do historic, and it's being mentioned, that it is more expensive to own the building because there's lots of rules about the looks of it, the upkeep. Okay. Now, we all know that we are practical people on this show. And so we don't just talk in theory. We ask what is the practical steps that need to be taken. What do we need to do if we've had a setback and it doesn't look like it's going to be so easy to resolve? It looks like it's going to be, well, permanent's a big word. But it's not temporary like the ones we talked about at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are we going to do about it? As a practical matter, what steps need to be done? Mm-hmm. Yeah, what should we do? We've had a setback. It's either internal, external, but we need to handle it. Mm-hmm. You know, Germaine has an interesting point that the main thing to do when you have that happen is to vote on how to proceed under the new circumstances. Yay, what a good idea. Take a vote. Ask. I'm very big on asking the group what they'd like to do. You vote on how to proceed under the new circumstances. This is what has happened. What should we do? Let's take a vote. Let's have a poll. Let's take a survey. Let's ask everybody what their opinion is, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people are asking if I do it in the room. I kind of take a survey in the room. Sometimes. I'm going to say what people say all the time, and I probably do. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on the complexity, the severity of the setback, and the issues that are at hand. You might, if it's very complex and it's not something you can understand as you're sitting there, it's hard to grasp all the implications, I would hold off until we have another meeting, even call an emergency meeting. You don't have to physically sit there before we take a vote. Because you got to know what the issues are first. You can't vote if you don't know what they are. And you really got to understand the new circumstances. It might take a while to get that squared away, to understand it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Misha says that oftentimes the group has the same goal, but you need to reassess the methods of achieving it. Good point. The setback might not be devastating to what you want to do, just to how you're going to do it. You need to reassess the methods of achieving the goal. Hmm? Same goal, but got to think about the new circumstances and see what to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sean and others are saying that you may need to modify the goal. The setback may create additional steps. Mm-hmm. You may need to modify the goal because the setback might create additional steps. Yeah. You might need to say, well, we can make a new timeline, and we can probably get this much accomplished. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Modify the goal. Zeta isn't making a very good point that when you, the practical thing to do is to bring in new expertise. Mm-hmm. Think about it and think about what now where do we go and who would know what to do, and let's bring them in. We might even need to have a budget for an expert to come in and tell us their opinion about what the goal should be now, how to reassess it. Sometimes we're all too close, so bring in new expertise. Mm-hmm. Pamela and others, a lot of people are saying that the main practical thing you need to do and the steps that need to be taken is to raise additional funds. Yeah, a lot of times the setbacks are economic. It just cost more than we thought. Or it took longer and therefore cost more. Or we didn't raise quite as much as we had hoped. Mm-hmm. Good point that other issues sometimes crop up that we didn't really visualize when we set the funding goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a really good point, too. Hayden and others are saying that you create media attention concerning the setback. Mm-hmm. You need a practical step to do something practical and workable to do. You've had a setback. That would usually be an external one. And you could create some media attention in your favor concerning the setback. Get some sympathy. Mm-hmm. Get some ideas. Get some public sentiment behind you. If the setback was caused by someone not in agreement with your group and they got the law changed or whatever. Yeah, get some media attention concerning the setback. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the point is being made that both traditional and social media. Because a lot of times people think about media as one or the other. But really they're the same. You know, traditional media, at least in the United States, and I'm certain that it's the same all over, traditional media nowadays really looks to social media, looks to the blogs and to the videos and things that are out there. And, you know, social media is very, very effective in getting attention. And once the attention is gotten, a lot of times traditional media will pick up the story. Mm-hmm. And it's good both ways. Yeah, yeah. And it's good. Television especially is particularly good because it's so visual. Mm-hmm. And people do still, television is still quite popular. And you can, of course, get the video and post it online, the program, the part from the television that you were on. Yeah. Create media attention concerning the setback. Mm-hmm. And it's a good way to have something changed that has just been perhaps passed or whatever that wasn't in your favor. Create some media attention. Show what's wrong with it. Show what the discriminatory way it's being enforced, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, at the moment, there's a big fight in the United States that's getting a lot of media attention, a lot of actual advertising, which costs fund money, of course. You need to fund advertising. But there's a lot of advertising on the television and other places concerning genetically modified food. Genetically engineered, I think they call it, modified food. Now, this is, of course, an international show, and I know that other countries, I happen to be in the United States, but we don't label as well if something has been modified, genetically modified foodstuff, as other countries do. And there's a big fight about what should be labeled and what's included under the law and like that. And so that's getting media attention by both sides to try to garner support because it's being voted upon. Mm-hmm. That is a question that's being put to the people. It's being voted upon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Christus and others are saying that, that's a good idea, and you can campaign to eradicate the problem. Yeah, you can campaign to show that this is a problem, and this is what we should what should be done about it. Public sentiment is a very, very good thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, campaign to eradicate the problem. Mm-hmm. Terrence says that the main way, as a practical matter, to overcome a, well, a setback that's not temporary, I hate to call it permanent, because we're going to overcome it, right, is to, Terrence says, to invite new members interested in the new issues into the group. Yeah, you've got some new issues, right? I know this because we've had to refocus. We've had some sort of a, usually an external setback, could be an internal one too, yeah. And we need to invite new members interested in the new issues into the group. We've got some new issues. We've got new circumstances. Time to look for some new people who have interest and expertise, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Adam and others are also pointing out that it's a real, there's a real practical matter that oftentimes we are not alone in our opinions and in working together to effectuate some change. There's other groups working too. Mm-hmm. And we might have had a setback that didn't affect them. So it's a good moment to reach out, and believe me, you don't have to wait for a setback. You should always reach out. Reach out to other groups that are trying to reach the same goal and work together with them. You can combine, yeah. And that will, of course, make new membership. Mm-hmm. And yes, new membership takes a little while to assimilate, and they all have to get comfortable with the concept of team with your group. But still, that's a very excellent idea. And you know, one of the things, of course, that is a very good way to get new participants to be welcome into the group and to want to remain and to want to become members of the team is to get to know them a little better, right? Yes. And that's what Recipe for Peace Now uses the food for. And you know, I always say this, but it's really true. The food is a tool. It is not because we are hungry, even though we might be. I mean, it might be dinner time. But it's really a tool to get people together and talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, when tempers maybe become a little less than civil, and of course we like to always enforce our civility rules, when things get a little bit hot, it's good at a time out to have something nice to do together. And what's better to do together than to share a nice potluck? Mm-hmm. And it gives you something to talk about that you won't be mad about, that won't anger anyone. Yeah, it makes for a convivial good time. Right. And so the food is a tool. Now, I'm going to say the same thing that I always say because it is so terribly important. Yes. And if you want to prove that I always say this, last five archived on our website, last five shows, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And the thing that I always say, which is so important, is that if you're going to have food, you need to take a survey and disseminate the information of all the participants as to whether anyone has a food restriction, a food allergy, or a religious restriction to a type of food. You don't want anybody to get sick or hurt or angry. This is supposed to be a convivial moment. We're getting to know each other. It's pleasant. You don't want anybody to have a bad time. Also, in that vein, you will tell everyone who's coming, and they're bringing food, of course, that the food needs to be labeled. Not what it's called, meatloaf, but what is in it, so that I can determine whether or not I can eat it, given my food prohibitions, right? Right. Very important to label it. Yes. Okay. Now, I also think that as the leader, we usually are the leader, it's important to not run out of food. I guess that's my little picadillo, because I really don't think it's a good party if you run out of food halfway through. So I like to bring extra. And I think that among the things that you bring extra, you should have a safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? It doesn't have too many ingredients. We have taken the survey amongst our participants, and we don't think that anyone can't eat it. And also, you know that list that we just talked about of ingredients? On that list would be things that my people would be familiar with in my area. Now, my familiarity with certain foods is not necessarily your familiarity with certain foods. This is an international show. But something that you think that people would have eaten before and know if they can eat, and you've taken the survey, they're not allergic. So, here we go. This is going to be our safe recipe. Let's see how we're doing on time. We're running a little short. That's all right. I think we'll make it. This is going to be our safe recipe. It's a pasta with beans and beef. Very, very nice. And it is easily put onto the plate, right? And if you want more spicy condiments, cheese, whatever, you put that on the side. So here we go. Let's have about a tablespoon of oil, pound and a half of a nice piece of beef, nothing too chewy, that we're going to cut into cubes, because we're not going to make meatballs, we're just going to have meat. Now, if you don't want to make the meat into cubes, you can use ground beef and brown that also. Depends how you feel about it. It's a little nicer with the chunks of meat in it. A little more expensive, too. Let's have an onion that we're going to finely chop. 3 stalks of celery that we're going to chop up. You know, people leave the leaves on celery. I've never done that. I think they're kind of bitter. You can make a judgment about that. But chop them nice. You know, chop the celery stalks. Mm-hmm. 3 cloves of garlic that we're also going to finely chop. People say I use a lot of garlic. If you think that's true, use less. We're going to have one of those really big, like a 28-ounce cans of crushed tomatoes with the juice. You can't find that big use, too, of course. If you would like to use fresh tomatoes, you will, of course, have a much finer product than I have. But to tell you the honest truth, canned tomatoes is very easy for me to come by, and it's a big time saver, so I'm going to use the can. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm also going to use canned beans. You know that if you use, I'm going to call them raw, but uncooked, unprocessed beans, that you need to rinse them. Sometimes, depending on where you've got them, they've got some debris in there. And you want to be sure and take that out. And then you boil them and you soak them. You have to soak them overnight is what I'm telling you. Yeah, you have to become soft. I'm going to use a couple of cans. Let's use 2 16-ounce cans of, you know what's really nice, those little white beans. They're called cannellini, if you can find them. And when you use canned beans, I don't know how to say this any nicer. The juice that they're in is kind of like slime. So you need to rinse them off under running water. Drain the can, rinse them off under running water, and lay them on a towel. This is also a very good moment to get rid of any excess, I'm going to call it shell, but it's the membrane that's on beans. Sometimes they're kind of loose, or they're floating around in the juice. For heaven's sake, get rid of them. It's edible, but it's really ugly. Yeah, so you remove the membrane. Not on all of them, it doesn't make any difference, but the ones that are getting in the way. Mm-hmm. Let's have, a half teaspoon of dried oregano and the same amount of dried basil. Mm-hmm. And we're going to need lots of pasta. because that's all the stuff for our sauce. So let's have a couple pounds of pasta that we're going to cook al dente, which means firmly, and drain. And let's have about a half a cup of beef broth. It's just so that when you look at the beef broth, it's for when to thin out the sauce as you're cooking it, if it looks like it doesn't have enough liquid. You could eyeball that. Sometimes, I don't know why it changes, but a lot of times I never use the beef broth, so you can decide. Okay, so we're going to take our oil, and we're going to heat it in a nice big skillet, and we're going to take our chunks of beef or our ground beef, depending on what you're using, and we're going to brown it. The chunks get browned on all sides. You turn them around. It takes, about 2 minutes on each side. The ground beef gets browned. Yeah. Remove the beef from the pot now because we don't have enough room. Put it to the side. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to, might need a little bit of oil more depending on if there was fat in the meat, and there would be in the ground. So now to the pot we're going to add the onion and the celery, and we're going to stir fry it, so to speak. We're going to cook it for about 5 minutes until everything gets nice and soft and smells nice, right? Let's add the garlic, cook it for another minute. Stir in the tomatoes, sauce included, beans, which have been drained, of course, the oregano, the basil. And we're going to bring that to a boil. We're going to reduce the heat and simmer it covered for, about 15 minutes. You got to look at it occasionally. You can't just walk away, not stir it constantly, but you need to look at it and give it a stir, and this is your moment for the beef broth. It won't take more than half a cup, this we know, but sometimes you need to have a little liquid, and beef broth is perfect. You could add a little bit of water if you wanted to and you didn't want to have didn't want to open a can of broth. So, okay, pasta has been cooked, right? We're going to take our pasta and put it into a nice dish. We're going to add the bean mixture and the cooked beef. We're going to stir it all around, and there we've got it. Delicious. Mm-hmm. People are asking what kind of pasta. My rule of thumb is something that is easy and not messy to serve. Something that is pieces, like a rigatoni or a bow tie or something like that. Those little shells are pretty, but not the long fettuccine spaghetti type noodles that you need to have a tongs for. It's messy. Hard to get on a plate. Hard to control how much you've taken. This way you use a spoon and you put it on your plate. Very, very neat. Yes, cheese to the side. Mm-hmm. Parmesan to the side is always nice, too. I don't ever sprinkle it on because, first of all, on the entire thing, it gets kind of melty and then people don't have it. And people like a certain amount. You'll see if you put cheese on the top of a thing like this, people will dig around either to avoid it or to get it. It's very strange. Okay. So that was our safe recipe. Now, I think we're going to have just too much, about enough time to do our adventure recipe. Why is this an adventure recipe? Because it has ingredients that some people won't use, don't want to have in their food, like red wine. Mm-hmm. And also it has some items that might not be familiar to everyone. They might not have eaten it before. And it's a little more, it's got yogurt and it's got wine, it's really the wine. And it's a little more of a list, a little more sophisticated, and you don't want to violate anyone's food prohibitions. So this is our adventure recipe. It needs to be carefully labeled. It's actually a moussaka. A lovely thank you, Amelia, sent this in, and it's just delicious. I'd actually never made it before because it's just not something that I knew about. And we tried it, and wow, it's a great recipe. And it's lots of fun when the weather is cooler, too, because it's kind of a stew topped with a delightful, cheesy, crusty coating Delicious. Mm-hmm. You just kind of put your spoon in all the way down to get the goodness. So, those of you who have been here for quite a while, and thank you, I see a lot of people have returned. You know I'm fond of eggplant. It just kind of am. So here we go. We're going to have 2 cans of the same kind of little white beans that we used in the last recipe. Mm-hmm. They're rather delicious and kind of mild. And also we're going to do the same thing. We're going to rinse them off, remove the shells, and drain them. No juice. If you would like to use fresh beans, the preferred type is what's called a cranberry bean. It's kind of a little reddish one that's very mellow in taste. Mm-hmm. Not bitter at all, like a kidney bean. If you're going to use fresh, use about 1.5 cups. And, of course, you need to soak them and boil them. And like that, the canned ones are already pre-made, really. They're all pre-cooked. Let's have 2 large, 3 small, depending on how you think about it, eggplants that we're going to slice up. Uh-huh. And then we would like about 1/3 cup of olive oil, 2 garlic cloves that we're going to crush, nice onion that we chop, how about 1/2 pound of sliced mushrooms, sliced fresh mushrooms. This is the one thing that I never use canned, because canned tomatoes really taste the same as real tomatoes, at least to me. If you're going to be a connoisseur, they don't. And the beans are so much easier, and they're nice and firm. Mushrooms, canned mushrooms, do not taste anything like real mushrooms. So we're going to have some sliced mushrooms, about 1/2 pound. And we're going to have 2 big cans. Again, I'm going to use a can. You can use fresh if you want, of chopped tomatoes that we're actually going to drain this time. Mm-hmm. Let's have 1 cup of red wine. That's what makes this an adventure recipe. If you really don't like the red wine, you don't really want to use it, you could use the tomato juice that we just said that we were going to drain from the chopped tomatoes. And you could use a little bit of beef broth. Mm-hmm. Also, if you felt like it. You could use vegetable broth if you're keeping this vegetarian. It's kind of vegetarian, this one, because I didn't put meat or pork into it. But you certainly could. So we're going to have 1 cup of red wine. Let's have 2 tablespoons of tomato paste just to make it thick. And let's have 1 tablespoon of our lovely oregano. Okay. That's for the stew part, right? Yeah. Now, I told you it has a lovely, creamy, cheesy-type topping, which is what makes it a moussaka. Oh, mousse. People are telling me it's moussaka. Moussaka. Okay. And this is the topping part. So that was the stew part. The topping part gets 1 cup of yogurt. Please don't use the low-fat, no-body-to-it yogurt. The thicker, the better. In the United States, there's something called Greek yogurt. It has less water in it. You can drain off as much, it's not really water, it's whey, but the much liquid as you can out of it. So 1 cup of plain yogurt. Let's have 4 eggs that we're going to beat. 2 cups of milk. Yes, use whole milk. A little bit of paprika for color, like 1/4 teaspoon. And 1/2 cup, a little better, of grated Parmesan. And 1/2 cup of breadcrumbs, because we're going to mix them with the Parmesan. In the United States, there's such a thing as Parmesan cheese breadcrumbs that come in a container. I must confess, I wouldn't be adverse to using that, but I'd still put some Parmesan cheese because, really, they don't have any cheese in them, really, kind of. I suppose theoretically, but, you know, it's mostly the taste. So, okay, now what are we going to do? We're going to, well, you have to soak the beans and like that if you're using fresh ones, but I'm not going to. So we're going to slice the eggplant. And you know eggplant is kind of a damp object. So you need to sprinkle it with salt and set the eggplant slices aside for about 30 minutes so that the salt draws out the liquid. Sit them on paper towels or some sort of a towel. Mm-hmm. And after the 30 minutes, you rinse them and pat them dry because you get salt off and the liquid off. Mm-hmm. So the eggplant has now been kind of drained, and you've rinsed it and you've patted it dry. So now we're going to brush it with a little of the oil, and we're going to grill them. put them on the broiler or the grill. What, 3 minutes on each side until they're actually cooked. They're golden and nice and look nice. Mm-hmm. Stick them aside. Put them back on the paper towels. If you stick them on just a plate, they will get soggy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to sit to the side. We've got the beans that we've drained. We're going to put them in a big pot with some of the oil. And we're going to add the garlic and the onion. Well, you know what? Put the beans in after this. Do the garlic and the onion first and cook them until it's nice and translucent and smells good. What is that? 3 minutes. And now we're going to add the mushrooms, another 3 minutes until they get kind of brown. Now we're going to add the beans because we're using canned. If you're not using canned, of course, you've got them simmering and like that, right? You're right. Add the beans, the tomato, the wine, the tomato paste, the oregano, the whole bit. This is our stew sauce, so to speak. Bring it to a boil. Reduce the heat and simmer it for about 45 minutes. You're waiting for the sauce to get thickish. Mm-hmm. I really like to stir it occasionally. So we now have delicious tomato bean sauce stew, and we still have our eggplant slices over there, right? So put the bean mixture into the bottom of the baking dish, big, nice, big baking dish. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to put some layers of eggplant, top of tomato sauce, then eggplant. The trick is the eggplant has to be the top row because we're about to put the creamy part on top. And if you put it on the wet part, the bean mixture part, it'll sink in. It won't be on the top anymore. Yeah. So the first time I didn't think about that and I just layered it and went, oh, this is delicious. But it comes out better if the eggplant's on the top. Just take my word for it, the top row. Okay, so we've got our topping ingredients, right? We're going to whisk the yogurt, the eggs, the milk, and the paprika in a bowl until we combine them. That's all you do. You pour it over the eggplant. And you kind of set it aside for about 10 minutes because the whole thing has to settle. I know that it's not really baked or anything yet, but it still needs to settle. So let it rest for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. While that bowl is resting, while the pan is resting with all your delicious moussaka, you're going to preheat the oven to 400. You can combine the breadcrumbs and the Parmesan. Even if you're using Parmesan breadcrumbs, use some cheese also. Sprinkle it over the top of the creamy mixture. And this bakes for quite a while. It's really a cold weather dish. It bakes for nearly an hour. It takes a while for the whole thing to meld together and for the top to turn kind of a golden brown. So I know that it's basically cooked, but really the eggplant and stuff, they're not completely. And in order to incorporate everything, you got to leave it in there for a while, a fairly high heat. Also, when you take it out of the oven, it is, of course, extremely hot, and it needs to sit for a while to kind of be sure that it's firm, and also because it's really, really hot, and you don't want people to burn their mouths. Yeah. So, that is the moussaka. It's just basic. Yes, you can put meat in it. People are going, moussaka has lamb. Delicious. Yes, please do. And this is kind of a vegetarian one, but of course you put in what you like. And do not make it too spicy. And if it is used pork, it is an extra adventure recipe. Because pork is something that a lot of people don't eat. Hmm? Yes. So that's our adventure recipe. And I wanted to thank you. We are almost out of time. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. The last 5 shows, including this one, just as soon as we get off the air, the most recent five, are archived on our website at recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.